What's up, you beautiful people? Welcome back to the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we cover all the cool stuff happening, usually new tech, usually talking directly to the builders, building this new cool stuff, making Bitcoin more productive. I'm your host, Jacob Brown. Today, I have Matthew Black on the podcast. Matthew is the co-founder and CTO of Atomic Finance. Their tagline is sound finance for sound money. And that's what they're doing. After all the craziness of BlockFi, Celsius, where everyone's trying to chase juicy yield to make their crypto asset, you know, 100x, and maybe you can get a more yield on top of that, it all went bust because of lack of transparency and accountability. And so they're trying to build a better financial system through using proper L1 tech. And this first instantiation of their product is an iOS app powered by DLCs, discrete log contracts, which I think you're going to see a lot more, and I'm definitely going to keep harping on it, that it's a really nice balance of creating safe infrastructure. It's on L1, it's live, and it's just now starting to see. So you're seeing the Hero wallet now supports DLCs, Atomic Finance doing what they're doing, Deep Lake and Liquidium are doing cool stuff with ordinals. So I think DLCs are really coming into their time. So I had to get Matt on. We cover a ton of topics. I was curious about his background because he's a young kid. So he's been in Bitcoin for close to a decade now, I think, because he found it in high school. So very cool to see. We talk about the best place to get into Bitcoin if you want to build on Bitcoin and be a dev. Where would he go? We talk about the complexities of kind of being at the bleeding edge of Bitcoin, building on things like DLC and a bunch of other topics. So this one was fantastic. I love the way they built out this app and built a very specific use case that's just a pleasure to use. I think there needs to be more Bitcoin designed like this. So without further ado, let me stop rambling and show this great conversation with Matthew Black, is co-founder of Atomic Finance.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Matt, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
And likewise, I like what you guys are building, and we're going to talk a lot about Atomic Finance and sound money needing sound finance, which I love that tagline. But maybe just to jump off, you know, you guys popped up on my radar recently and got to know Tony a little bit. Don't know much about you. So I'd love to just do like a little brief background into that and how you got here.
I should probably start like, how did I originally get into Bitcoin? Funny enough, it was actually my dad that introduced me to Bitcoin way back in 2014. So he's a bit of a gold bug. And so, you know, something like Bitcoin was really interesting to him because it's kind of this asset that exists outside of the purview of government, which is, you know, exactly what he was looking for. And so I was actually, at the time I was in high school, I didn't really know much about money. But it's funny because my dad's non-technical, right? So I was more, you know, technical minded. I was programming at the time. And so I was just managing his Bitcoin for him. And then fast forward, I kind of forgot about Bitcoin for a couple of years, got back, you know, into the space in 2017, 2018. And this is where I was at University of Waterloo. And this is actually where me and my co-founder met, Tony. We were roommates at the time. And basically, I wouldn't shut up about Bitcoin to him. I was like, hey, like, this stuff is really cool. And in particular, you know, we went to University of Waterloo. And so that was kind of the founding place of Ethereum. And so we actually ended up going down that road, you know, into the whole like, hey, DeFi is really interesting. Why can't you, you know, just have access to financial tools within, you know, internet connection? We eventually, you know, realized that, you know, we really weren't that happy with what was being built in Ethereum and came full circle back to Bitcoin. And now we're building, you know, financial tools for Bitcoin only. You know, it became, yeah, I guess, Bitcoin maximalist in the process. And so, yeah.
I love it. Did you say, so in 2014, you were in high school doing programming, and then 2017, 2018, you were at university doing the same?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I want to run this by, because this hit me recently, which is there's kind of a gripe that people have against the younger crowd of, like, they're ideological, and so they see the world a different way, they have fresh eyes, but they lack practicality is what they'll say. And it's kind of bracketed against the fact that when you're young, you don't have a network, really, you don't have resources, you're not in positions of power. So typically, the best they could do is, like, complain, protest, XYZ thing. And it struck me recently that coding for Bitcoin specifically, but crypto in general, is like the first time where, person of any age, but really, let's say the younger crowd who has these fresh eyes, can bring the future they want to into existence just through their computer and literally change, like, bring property rights to, you know, billions of people, change money. So I was curious of your stance on that. Like, how do you feel about that as someone who's at an early age, you know, been building in this area?
Yeah, I think in general, a lot of, I think there's two parts of it, right? There's a lot of, I guess, folks that are my age and, you know, even when I was, you know, younger, you know, back in university, had a certain view on the world that I think Bitcoin has obviously changed, and you end up going down the rabbit hole. But I think there, you know, it's one of those things where Bitcoin's kind of the first place where you can, you know, the world is constantly changing around you and going in different directions. And I think really, like, my generation is really the generations that's going to be the most affected by the fiat scheme, right? They're the ones that are going to, you know, be the poorest generation, basically. And Bitcoin's really a way to kind of fight against that. And programming's really a way for you to be able to build whatever you want, you know, with the tools at your fingertip. And I think this is really the case for a lot of folks. But I think one of the areas where people, especially programmers, I think get lost is that they get focused on the what and not on the why, right? What is the why of Bitcoin? You know, we don't need a money printer anymore. This, you know, sound money, right? There's a supply cap on Bitcoin. The fact that it's decentralized, like, all of these aspects are super important to the why of Bitcoin. And there's a lot of programmers that get focused on the what, right? Like, oh, it doesn't have these capabilities, or you can't do XYZ with it, or I'm going to build a better Bitcoin by doing this. And I think that's where a lot of people get lost. I spoke to a NASA engineer the other day, and he was literally telling me, he's like, oh, you know, I don't know why everyone's not using this other Cardano, right? It's written in Haskell. It's such a better programming language. And this guy's working on the lunar rover. And so, you know, really, really smart guy, but not too focused on the what. And so I think for young people, it's important to do your reading, right? Read the Bitcoin standard and understand the why behind Bitcoin. Otherwise, you might make a lot of progress, but you might be focused on the wrong things.
Mm, well said. And so for the why, just to hear in your own words, what is the why that people are missing when it comes to Bitcoin or versus another cryptocurrency that sounds alluring?
I think the why that they're missing is it's not so much about, like, the programmability of Bitcoin. It's the fact that, you know, it's sound, right? So I think it's the monetary properties that they're missing. The fact that it can't be easily changed. The fact that there's a supply cap. The fact that, you know, when you're, you know, if you're building a financial layer, you need the underlying properties to be sound. You can't have it constantly changing underneath you, or the rules are being changed. And I think that as the foundation is really what people are missing. They're too focused on, you know, what is the newest and greatest thing, rather than what is the thing that's going to keep my capital safe and what's going to allow me to keep that capital safe and create generational wealth that's going to be able to be passed down, because it's really the best money that's ever been created for humanity. Yeah, I think that's what they're missing.
Got it. I want to delve into what you mean by sound finance, because I just had a conversation with Adon Yago last week, and there's something about, like, I'll ask a question, and you could tell just by the way that, like, they almost reframe the question quickly, and they go to, like, a first principles thinking of, like, what is money, and they'll do a whole thing. And one moment that happened with me and him is, like, I was like, how do we get mass adoption to Bitcoin? And he was like, what does that even mean, mass adoption? And like, that wasn't a part of the question I ever thought about. I was just like, it means more people, everyone, you know, duh. And we don't think deep on these things. So when it comes to sound finance, like we know sound money, there's like the thing of it has a certain sound to it. It's so you know it's peer, these kind of things. When you talk about sound finance, like what are the elements of that that are essential for like building this base layer that is necessary for the next financial system?
Well, I think that in general, we should bring it back to what is the ethos of Bitcoin in the first place, right? One of the ethos that a lot of Bitcoiners talk about is self-custody, right? Like one of the great things that came with Bitcoin is that you can custody it yourself. You don't need to rely on the third party. You don't need to worry about a bank coming in and taking your money. As Bitcoiners rightly should, most people keep like the majority of their stack in cold storage. And then, okay, well, then what's next after that? Well, you maybe have payments, right? For any type of money to succeed, you need payments. We have Lightning Network. We can pay people in a non-custodial manner, and we could take self-custody of our payments infrastructure. And it's open to anyone on the internet. Anyone can access that. But then what's the next question? Okay, well, we can do payments. We can, store wealth. But how do we do financial tools, right? How do we hedge? How do we, Bitcoin's volatile. How do we get stability? How do we get these financial instruments that exist in the traditional world? Well, right now, you need to go to an exchange for that, right? You need to go to, BitMEX. You need to go to, maybe you went to FTX last year. I literally talked to a company recently in Canada, and they were hedging using BitMEX. Then they were banned from using BitMEX because they were Canadian. And then they started using FTX, and they lost a portion of their balance sheet just because they were trying to hedge. And so to me, it seems like for a sound, if we're going to have a sound financial layer for Bitcoin, it needs to have as many properties of Bitcoin as possible to make sure that folks don't get rugged at the end of the day. Like we should be trying to build tools that make sure that, if you're using this, that you have a self-custody as much as you possibly can to make sure you're not encountering, those additional risks. And I think with something like Bitcoin, this is even more important because in the traditional world, you always have a backstop, right? You have a lender of last resort. There's no lender of last resort in Bitcoin. There's no, if that Bitcoin gets stolen or you get rugged, there's no getting it back. There's no legal proceedings for getting that back. And so it's even more important to have, those properties, I think, within the sound financial layer.
Right. Yeah, it makes me think the thing the NASA person gets wrong as well is like, and maybe Ethereum as well, is you want, as you go up the stack, unless the tools get good enough, you have to make some trade-offs, So Lightning will have trade-offs, DLCs have trade-offs, everyone have trade-offs, but the base layer should be as robust as possible. And then once you get like the fourth or fifth level, then maybe you can consider like, you deploy some BTC wrapped onto Cardano and it's super whatever the heck you want to talk about, and you could go do stuff over there. Like, it's at that fifth level. It's not the base layer. But I like... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you make certain trade-offs as you go up the stack, but I think like retaining as many properties as possible, right? Like if you don't have to do wrapped Bitcoin or you don't have... Like if you could do it in a manner where like, you still have as many properties of Bitcoin as possible. Like DLCs, for example, you need to trust an Oracle, right? And that's absolutely necessary because you need external price data for that. But you don't need to give away like full custody of your Bitcoin, that you can just be rugged. So making sure along those layers that we're retaining as many properties as possible, I think is essential.
100%. Yeah. And that's where you start to get into the dance of robustness, like security, but then UX, because, typically the things that are most secure are going to have increased friction, and that's why they're secure. And so when you abstract things away, that's when you introduce UX easiness at the cost of something else. And so we have a good foundation we're building on as far as like sound money, these kind of things. So I'd love to start jumping into what you guys are building specifically and kind of dance around in these weeds here. So let's start with the origin story of like, so you and Tony went to college together. Were you already building, like, give me the brief breakdown of, like, you were building in crypto. How did that come together? And then the decision to move into Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were originally building, essentially we were building a cross-chain product. We wanted to allow for folks to be able to get access to Bitcoin-backed loans and as trustless a manner as possible. And we were building this cross-chain. And at the time, we really weren't that happy with what was being built in Ethereum. There was a lot of folks doing ICOs, a lot of folks doing governance tokens, as well as we had an increasing feeling that the surface area for attack for something like a smart contract, like using EVM, was fairly high, and so at the time that all that was happening, we started learning more about DLCs. A couple companies in the space were building using financial primitives directly on Bitcoin itself, and this was really exciting to us. And so we actually decided to make the jump after, Tony read the Bitcoin standard, and I did as well, and we just decided, like, hey, this is kind of the base layer that's going to exist for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Why don't we start building on top of this layer? And so that's really where we made the leap over to DLCs. Now, what is a DLC? A DLC is just a financial primitive directly on Bitcoin itself, on chain. So it's a Bitcoin Oracle contract, right? So you can do things like bets, futures contracts, options contracts. And obviously you need to trust an Oracle for that, but your Bitcoin is actually locked directly on chain. In essentially a two of two multisig, obviously with off-chain data. So it's very similar to Lightning. And so we thought to ourselves, well, what's the simplest thing we can try out? Betting, right? So we actually did an example application. We built Atomic Odds that allowed for people to actually bet on the U.S. election. And that went really well. People were excited about it. And we're like, well, what's the thing that people are most interested in? Well, everyone wants to make a return on their Bitcoin. How can we make a way for people to be able to earn a return on their Bitcoin in a transparent manner? And that's where we got to what we're building now, which allows for, passive strategies that allows for folks to make a return on their Bitcoin using covered calls. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. Trying to decide if I want to go into the app or more into DLCs. I think I want to keep it on DLCs for a little bit. So, we're focused on builders here, and I'm always fascinated by programming is a big industry, and Web2 still dominates most of that talent. And then Web3 is getting some of it, and then even smaller is the Bitcoin builders, which are like very high conviction, but there's just nowhere near enough of them. And so how has it been building on Bitcoin, and maybe more specifically with DLCs, where there isn't that many? It's been out for a couple of years, I think, at least, live on mainnet, and you really haven't seen that many applications launch. You're probably the first really user-friendly one, and there's new ones with like Ordinals coming out just in the past 6 months. How's that experience been, and like, why do you think is it so slow? Is it because of complexity? Is it something else? Curious.
I think in general, the first thing you have to think about is if you look at something like Ethereum, there's a lot of like developers that exist there because it's very easy to kind of get exit liquidity, right? It's very easy to go out there, build it, create a token, launch it, and then like you've got a project, and it doesn't really matter if you maintain it. And so there's a lot of developer share that's just existing in kind of that pump and dump scheme. But the other thing as well is, in general, it's very it's a lot more challenging to build in Bitcoin. Like when we made the leap, a lot of the infrastructure wasn't built out, right? If you think about something like Ethereum and you've got a smart contract, it takes care of the liveliness requirements. It takes care of this functionality or that functionality. You've got to go build all that from scratch with Bitcoin, right? There's no like Infura for Bitcoin, right? And rightly so, everyone should run their own node, right? And so when we first started, we had to go through those hurdles and figure out, okay, first off, how do we make this a really easy user experience? There's no MetaMask for Bitcoin. We had to create our own wallet to make that process simple. We had to, get familiar with DLCs. We had to figure out, what are the kind of security parameters that people are concerned about? Do education, right? Everyone already knows how to use all these other tools, but people don't know how to do that with Bitcoin. How many Bitcoiners even know what a DLC is? And so all of these are really challenging. But I think that once you can overcome those, once you overcome those initial like challenges, then, and you can make a really easy user experience for people to be able to access these tools and they feel secure with it, I think that's where it becomes really exciting. And this is where I think the financial layer for Bitcoin can come from. If we can build those really simple tools for folks to be able to get access to these financial tools on Bitcoin, then that's where I think we can see a lot of growth and scale of these financial primitives.
Or, so we're gonna dance around here, but I wanna stick on the builder part because I wanna try and attract more people. So if you are new, and I ask this a lot, it's everyone gives different answers. For if you're a friend who is in Web 2 and want to jump into Bitcoin building, where would you point them? Or would you have to ask more clarifying questions and be like, do you want to build on Lightning? Do you want to build, like, where are you going to build? Like, how would you approach that?
I think I would want to know, like, what areas is the most interesting to them, because I think there's a few areas in Bitcoin. You know, if someone comes from, like, a social media background, then, like, building on Nostr is really interesting, and I wouldn't want to point them away from that. But I think really that, you know, the three areas that are the most interesting to me are really Nostr, Lightning, DLCs. And I think in general, what I would recommend is, I think there's a really great ecosystem that's being built out in the Rust ecosystem right now. Bitcoin Development Kit, BDK, Lightning Development Kit, LDK, Rust DLC. And I think that ecosystem is really going to allow for these type of tools to flourish long term. There's kind of a need, I think, in general of, hey, like, why isn't there just open markets for things like DLCs, right? Like, why isn't there just a futures market or a options market for, in Bitcoin? Like, those things don't exist yet. And I think there's a lot more applications that need to be built out in this open source space. So, and the other thing too, is I think that most of these tools that are going to be built are going to rely on, at least in the short term, are going to rely on Lightning. So I would get really familiar with that. And then start moving into, like, what type of application you want to build. Because, you know, at any time, the on-chain fees can spike dramatically and you're going to need, Lightning support. So, and the other thing too, is I think people need to realize too, is when we started, there weren't that many tools built, right? There weren't that many libraries that were built out for things like DLCs or even Lightning. And now those things are becoming that much more accessible. And so there's never been a greater time than now to start, dipping your toes into Bitcoin development or Lightning development or whatever is the most interesting to you.
Got it. So it sounds like the lowest hanging fruit is learn Rust, because it gives you so much coverage across so much burgeoning ecosystems. I think I've heard, like, even Fedi is building on Rust, so you get exposure to that ecosystem, which is very new and coming online. So that's where you point them.
And I'm not a huge fan of Ordinals, but if that's your thing, then, like, obviously the original Ord wallet was written in Rust as well. And so, you know, that's just another thing. It's like the Rust ecosystem is becoming, really a foundation. You know, there's Bitcoiners out there that literally ask the question, well, you know, what if Bitcoin Core was written in Rust? And so, that's where everything's being built.
Got it. What's your beef with Ordinals?
I think with Ordinals in general, it's like, block space is a very, like, scarce resource, obviously. And so I think Bitcoin was developed for a very specific purpose, right? Bitcoin was developed for, I don't know if the term is not digital cash, but it was developed as a form of money. And so when we think of Bitcoin, we think of it in that terms. And so, in general, a lot of people say, oh, well, you have the free market folks to say, hey, Ordinals should be built, you should be able to use them. But I think in general, it's also in a certain aspect a bit of a bug, because, like, well, if you're a free market thinker, you could also think, hey, anything should be able to be built on Bitcoin. But really, Bitcoin is designed for very specific purposes, right? So it's not designed to be AWS, right? You're not going to put everything on the chain itself. We're not going to, we generally shouldn't have super big blocks because, then everyone's not able to verify things using their node. And so at the same time, I don't think there's a way to stop it, right? Like, SegWit, enabled the discount, and then Taproot increased the script size. And if we want to do interesting things, if we want to build on Bitcoin, then that script size needs to be larger. I think it's unfortunate a little bit that the witness discount is slightly less, such that most of the ordinal data that's going on chain is paying a lower fee than your typical as a percentage compared to your typical transaction. So yeah, I don't know. That's my kind of like brief beef with ordinals, but I also don't think there's a good way to stop it. So
right, okay, yeah, I'm just curious.
I know you're on the other side of the aisle, so
yeah. I mean, I think that there's a race going on between BTC the asset and BTC block space. And when I look at scarcity being such a big function on both the asset and the number, but also block space to keep fees high, I'm definitely in the maxi camp of long-term payments are going to be the highest value bidders of block space for sure. But in the short term, like most people, it just shocks me. Most people live paycheck to paycheck globally, so they don't think long-term, so they're going to do short-term behavior. And so for Bitcoin to sustain in the interim, I think you're going to have 20 different oddball things like ordinals that are going to fill up fee revenue and then as payments come online more, they're going to keep getting pushed out and die. And we're going to see that 20 times over the next 20 years. That's my, like, long-term, I agree with you. Short-term, I think that it's a necessary but insufficient adoption thing for Bitcoin is how I view it.
Well, I think one of the good things that comes from ordinals is that it encourages a lot of developers that were even in Ethereum to come over and build on Bitcoin. And so what I hope is that they go and they start building with ordinals, and then they realize, hey, there's this other ecosystem that exists here. I want to build more on Bitcoin. And then they start doing that. And so that's my hope for it. The thing that I hope doesn't occur is that there's a lot of new people that come in, and there's not too many like pump and dump schemes that occur. That there's a lot of grifters I find in the ordinal space, and so I hope that there's not too many people that end up losing their shirt by going out and trading ordinals. It's like, hey, maybe that gets you into Bitcoin, but I hope that you put some Bitcoin in cold storage so that you're saving for the long term and start building that generational wealth. Yeah,
agree. Yeah. Totally agree. It's weird right now because it obviously we're in like the depths of the bear market still. It depends on what you're building. Like when you're a builder, you're just kind of heads down doing stuff. So the bear market's kind of irrelevant. But yeah, you saw, since I paid attention to it probably more than you do, like the ordinals craze was like hyped for 3 months. And now it's like doomsday nonstop. It's like ordinals are dead, antis are dead, but it'll be back. Like the number will go up, people will come in to speculate, all the usual things that happen every cycle. But let's jump back on the Atomic. So for people that want to try it out, we haven't really gone into, like, if I'm a BTC holder, what am I doing when I go use Atomic? Like, what's the benefits? How do I interact with it? Break it down a little bit.
Absolutely. So it's really simple. Atomic's just a mobile app that allows folks to earn a return or a yield on their Bitcoin. But they were able to do that actually in a transparent manner. So if we recall, what we allow for folks is to invest basically in passive strategies. So this is a really great alternative to some of the other things that we saw last year. Last year, we saw things like Celsius, like BlockFi, that were able to earn you a return on your Bitcoin or yield on your Bitcoin, but they were done in a completely non-transparent manner, right? You had to go and deposit your Bitcoin into a black box. And at the end of the day, you didn't know how they were lending out your Bitcoin. You didn't know where your Bitcoin was going. And what did we end up with? Well, we ended up in a situation where, $20 billion in Bitcoin was lost over the course of last year. That's like the GDP of El Salvador, right? It's crazy. And so what we wanted to build was a way for folks to earn a return in a manner that was very transparent. So using these passive strategies, what you do is you invest into a DLC for a month at a time. And what we do is we enter you into what's called a covered call automated strategy. So first off, what is a covered call? It's really simple. It's just a simple, financial instrument that allows for you to be willing to, basically you get a premium or you get yield or a return for being willing to sell your Bitcoin at a certain price. So as an example, say the Bitcoin price today is $30,000 and I sell a call with a strike price. So that's the, cost I'm willing to sell at $33,000. So if Bitcoin stays below that, then I earn a premium, I earn a return. If it goes above, then, I have to sell Bitcoin at that price, which basically really just means I lose a small percentage of Bitcoin. I might lose like 0.5% or 1%. But what's really interesting about that is that no matter what happens, even if Bitcoin stays below, then I get more Bitcoin. If Bitcoin goes above, then my Bitcoin's worth more in dollar terms. And so what most people don't really know how to trade options, right? Like people, most people aren't experts. And so that's why we automated it for folks so that, you know, the majority of the time, it's not even taking a position. It's not even in a, you know, a call option because a lot of the time, it's not a good time to take a position. Bitcoin's, you know, going up dramatically. So we designed it in a way where that if Bitcoin's going up, you know, dramatically, you know, it's not in a position. And whenever Bitcoin goes down, we take a position that allows you to earn that return. So it's like, you know, enjoy the pump and then earn a premium when the price goes down is kind of the basic idea of what we think of.
Got it. Yeah, it is the, these are like way, I kind of understand it, but it's way, I don't do any of this stuff. It's way too risky for me. I don't trust myself. But what has been, and I'm using Atomic now. You guys onboarded me last week, so we'll see how it goes. It's TBD. Haven't seen hard numbers yet. But what is, for people that want to try it out, what's been the expected returns, or how's it been performing, say, over the past? Well, I guess when do you guys officially go live?
Yeah, so we went live with the latest iteration of the strategy in February this year, and we grew from, you know, just a couple Bitcoin invested to, I think now we're at 38 Bitcoin invested, which is really exciting, and just looking to grow more. Generally, the returns are historically like 7.84% APY. But of course, with something like really what you're doing with this type of strategy is you're monetizing volatility, right? So in general, like a lot of people say, hey, this goes against the HODL mentality. You should just HODL your Bitcoin. But the way we see it is like take just a small percentage of your stack and you can put it into this in order to earn a return on it. If you're earning 7.84% APY, you know, annually, you know, that's, you know, you're doubling your money in 9 years, right? And so this is just really an opportunity to be able to monetize that volatility, because whenever Bitcoin's going up and down dramatically, that means the volatility is high and that means the premiums are high as well. Now, keep in mind, during the bear market right now, so over the past couple of months, we've seen, you know, slightly lower returns, obviously, because the volatility hasn't been high. Bitcoin, you know, doesn't go up and down as much. But as we get into the next couple months and we see more volatility as we get closer and closer to the bull market, that's when we're going to see more and more volatility in Bitcoin and even more premiums, you know, being given out. So, you know, very excited for that over the next couple months.
Got it. Okay. So a little under 8% currently year to date. But going into the halving cycle, good time to be in this trading strategy. And it sounds like, yeah, I like what you said. I think Greg Foss says, you know, for most people, put 1% of your savings into Bitcoin as schmuck insurance, as he calls it. And for you guys, it's like the average hodler that's deep into Bitcoin has much more than 1% of their savings in Bitcoin because they're believers. And you're saying maybe take 1% of that and make it go to work for you. And you can do it in a non-custodial way using something like Atomic. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you know, you can even do like a DCA or something, right? Like, but, you know, that you really like the minimum you need to put in is 0.01, right? So that might be a, you know, a monthly DCA or a weekly DCA for you. And, you know, that's something you can put towards earning your return. And what we recommend to folks is, hey, just put a small amount in, test it out, try out the DLCs. All of this stuff sounds really complicated, but I'm sure you could vouch for it, Jake. You know, trying out the app is really simple. It's a, you know, one click button to enter the process. And we try to make, you know, DLCs are complicated, options are complicated, but we try to make it really, really simple for folks. And that's really, I think, our vision, right? Is to build a suite of sound financial tools that are super simple for your average person to access. And instead of going and using the exchange where you can be rugged at any point, why can't you, you know, like in a really simple manner, just access an application where you're holding your own keys at the end of the day. So we're really excited about that.
Yep. I can definitely attest to, you know, as I was learning more about DLCs, I was like, man, this is such a cool looking tech. Like, why is this not more common? And one of the big blockers, obviously, is wallet support. Like, it's just no one, it's kind of a chicken egg problem. Like, apps aren't being built because there's no wallet support. Wallet support isn't being built because there's no apps to use it. So you guys had to go straight to the building your own infrastructure with this beautiful app. And yeah, the onboarding experience is super nice. I even like the small touches where it's like, before you even make me create a wallet or import my wallet,
you have like some, the first step is just some education stuff, like a little bit of stuff about how trading works and strategies. And then if you pass that bar where it's like, cool, I'm bonding enough that I'll risk some of my capital, then you do the wallet piece versus go straight to that friction point where it's like, now I got to back up my key. Where am I going to write this down at? I don't even know if I trust you guys yet. So the onboarding flow is really, really thoughtful, and the app has some really nice graphical data that you can just at a glance see how your stuff's doing, all this. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, we really appreciate that, Jake. And that's something we've been focused on a lot, is education around this stuff. Like, you know, making it really simple. Like, what is a cover call? Like, what is a DLC? Like, just these simple things that, you know, just give you a better sense of security about what you're using at the end of the day. Because, you know, the last thing we want is someone, you know, using something that they don't really know what they're doing, and they don't know what the risks are ahead of time. And so that's so important, I think, to put out to people. There's we just heard so many, you know, horror stories of people investing in this product or that product. Hey, I'm getting 12% APY, and they disappear overnight. And so I think for us, like, being able to build that thing where you can get that transparency right in, you know, and right in your fingertips is just so important. And I think we need to see more folks building stuff like this. Like, this is what needs to be built on Bitcoin. These financial tools where, you know, you don't need to go to an exchange. You can, you know, you do it in the palm of your hand, and you can have your own keys, and you could verify exactly where your funds are at all times. I think that's like, that should be the basics. That should be the bare minimum for, you know, people building on Bitcoin.
100%. Yeah, and any builders listening, I would say, if you can, and I'll drop the links below, but check out the way you guys have built it, because there is a big problem in Bitcoin with UX. Most people will take shortcuts in doing things like introducing a wallet too early. And so your guys's decisive thinking around product and how you guys have like built this out, it's been inspiring to watch for me. Because DLCs, again, are like very hard thing very early. And I'm sure it made your design time longer to build it this way. But the numbers speak for themselves. Like, your traction numbers are above most for a new product. So spending that extra time and doing it right, especially on the product and thinking about the user side, will go a long way.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and I think the other thing as well is that that's something we spend a lot of time on. And because I think that one of the things that's important in Bitcoin is like long-term, right? If we look at the long-term of Bitcoin, the default for Bitcoin is custody, because most people just find that as an easier user experience. But the only way that the non-custodial tools are going to win is if they're super simple. And so I think for any builders out there, let's build the simplest UX that we possibly can for folks to make sure that they have control of their own money. Because if we don't, then, you know, the custodial solutions will win. And, you know, one day those people are going to be rugged. And so I think the vision I have, and the vision that we have, is that why can't the most secure and the most like non-custodial tools, why can't they be the easiest, right? Writing down your seed phrase is easier than having to go through KYC, right? So why can't that be the simple solution for people long term? So, we just got to keep building it.
It's funny. It makes me think of how I kind of opened it with the young crowd is ideologically motivated. And it's like that stance you just said, I couldn't agree with more, of like, why can't the non-custodial be the easiest to use? But I think for a lot of builders, it's like, but that's why it's hard. Like, you can't, the trade-offs, that's why we do trade-offs. That's why this LED wallet is custodial, because they have to, versus like, I'm not going to accept that you have to. We're going to build it this way. It's possible. The more people that spend the mental cycles doing it, the more we'll crack that piece. So yeah, it's just, word choice is super important. I think the way that you're phrasing it, it's like, yeah, I'm not going to settle. We shouldn't settle as a community. You can get both. You can do non-custodial and make it super freaking easy to use.
Yeah, it's like settle and get rugged, or don't settle and prosper for generations to come.
Bro, please make that bumper sticker that belongs to me, passionate everywhere. Well said. Okay, I want to start to bring this to a close, but sound finance is such a big topic and it covers so many things. It's a great mission statement to get behind. And you guys are starting what you've done with DLCs and this trading strategy, but I can't imagine that's your end all be all. So when you're, what's coming down the pipeline? What do you guys want to be working on? Like, what's your vision for, let's say, the next like 2 years out, 3 years out?
Yeah, for sure. So obviously passive strategies is the first, but that's, you know, definitely not the end of the road for us. We want to add additional strategies for folks as well. One of this is building in, you know, kind of downside protection strategies for folks. Like a lot of people, they hold Bitcoin all the way up in the bull cycle and they hold it all the way down. There's ways that you can kind of optimize around that. Another thing that's really interesting down the line is stable sats. So the ability to get stability, basically, using something like a DLC. Imagine you have in your Lightning wallet, you have a Bitcoin balance and a USD balance, but that's actually all backed by Bitcoin and settled using the Lightning Network. And speaking of the Lightning Network, that's something that we plan to integrate early next year. You can actually do DLCs directly on Lightning. That also means that, you know, something like Atomic would become a Lightning app as well. And so imagine you can, you know, you're earning sats using a passive strategy, but you're also able to, you know, send sats back and forth. You're also able to have, you know, a stable sats balance in your wallet. Imagine you can send like sats, you know, imagine you have a certain balance, right? Like I want to send you, Jake, I want to send you $10 USD, right? Imagine if I'm doing that using stable sats, you know, what it does is it closes the DLC. It's just doing a short position. It closes the DLC. It sends it over Lightning. You get it on your end and you enter another DLC on your end to have $10 USD. And this is all settled using Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin is the settlement layer of money for humanity. And, you know, I think that's what we can do with this. So, yeah, really, really bullish on integrating all those things in the future.
Love it. Love it. Okay, last question. I don't always ask this question, but I'm curious of your thoughts. So you've been building in DLCs mostly. You can't use DLCs in this answer. Out of all the things you've been working, like read about, seen in the communities, what are you most excited about right now? What are you most bullish on that's kind of like coming down the pipeline? Maybe it's theoretical, maybe there's some new code shipped. Like, what are you excited about?
That's a really good question. I think that there's two things I'm really excited about. I'm going to say the non-DLC answer first. One of those things is what's being built with Arc. So for, you know, listeners that might not know, Arc is a new potential scaling solution. One of the big problems with Lightning is inbound liquidity, and it solves that by basically having, you know, a service provider. And so, you know, as a new potential scaling solution for Bitcoin, I think Arc is really bullish. You can have non-custodial, a layer essentially of, you take your UTXO and you can lift it into a virtual VTXO and be able to send that to anyone. Now, one of the challenges is a significant amount of capital lockup. But I think really, like, if you just take Michael Saylor's capital and you take three times that, you could actually do every single transfer on Bitcoin in the course of a month. So it's fairly possible. So I think something like that could really allow Bitcoin to scale even better than Lightning, as long as you can get enough like capital locked on the service provider side. So I'm really bullish on Arc. And you would also potentially be able to do DLCs on top of this. So you could imagine, you know, one of the problems in general for DLCs is if you do it on chain, you can create a marketplace for it. But if you do it on Lightning, you always need to have a market maker on the other side of the channel. But on something like Arc, you wouldn't necessarily require that because, you know, anyone can send funds to anyone else, just like you can on Bitcoin Base Layer. So I think that could be a really nice marketplace that can be built on Arc. The other thing that's, I think, really exciting is obviously CTV, Check Template Verify. That can actually allow, instead, like, you might have noticed, Jake, like when you entered a DLC on the app, it took like 1 or 2 minutes to enter. That can be lowered down to 2 or 3 seconds using something like CTV because you don't have to do all the pre-signing of transactions. So, and then CTV also enables Arc to be done. So, you know, you hit two birds with one stone if you get CTV. So really excited about that.
Got it. Okay. For quick question on Arc, because I'm in that phase right now where I keep hearing about it. But until the like thought leaders come to consensus, I'm kind of hands off, and they're very much in like in the exploratory phase, it seems like. What's the current state of ARC? Is it theoretical, no code? Is it code starting to be written? Is it like wait? Is it code mostly written, waiting for the soft fork board, trying to get nodes to consensus? Like, where is it currently at right now?
So my understanding is that originally when Barak proposed ARC, there's two versions of it, right? There's an interactive version and a non-interactive version. So an interactive version would use multi-sigs essentially to allow for the process to be done. But the problem with that is it needs all participants that are using it to be online. And so that's a very high requirement. What do you need to do? You need to run a node in order to use something like ARC. And I just don't think that's going to happen. And so the alternative is obviously it requires a soft fork. Now, they originally thought that APO would also enable something like ARC. It turns out that it doesn't. You would need APO plus another change. On the other hand, CTV enables all of the things required for it. So it's kind of two possible ways that this could go in terms of soft forks. Either we get APO plus, I think it's called TX hash, or we get CTV. And either of those kind of enable ARC to be done. Now, I know that Barak, I believe, was assembling a team in order to build some code, initial code for ARC to actually work. And I think at the moment, the latest that I heard is they were deciding on whether to build the interactive version or the non-interactive version. And obviously, the non-interactive version would need to be built on something like SigNet or some type of testnet for Bitcoin that included CTV. So, obviously, we're definitely in the idea stage. Like, there could be more things that aren't compatible that haven't been thought of, or edge cases. It's completely hypothetical idea. Code needs to be written. Things need to be broken. But it's very promising in the short term. So we'll see what happens.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you for that. Well, cool. This has been a fantastic convo, Matt. Thank you. Any closing thoughts, things you want to say to the audience before you close out?
Yeah, I think there just needs to be, if you're a builder building on Ethereum right now, if you're someone who's thinking of building on Bitcoin or thinking of making a switch, I think like now is a great time to get in during the bear market and dip your toes in and try things out. I think I'm bullish on DLCs. People are sleeping on them. They've been sleeping on them for years. And I think we're just at the precipice of these really coming to light. So, if you're interested in, testing it out, we always recommend, hey, try out Atomic with a small amount of funds, get your toes wet with DLCs, try, learning Rust and, checking out the libraries that exist there. I think there's a lot more things that need to be built that haven't been built and we're just getting started. So, don't be afraid to try it out.
Love it. Great, great call to action for the builders. No better time to build on Bitcoin than right freaking now. So. Let's go. Okay, well, if people want to try out Atomic or connect with you, hit them with the obligatory links.
Absolutely. You can check us out on Twitter at Atomic Finance, or URL is atomic.finance. We're open betas available, so you can download the app and try it out.
And what's the minimum someone needs right now in BTC? And we can give like the BTC amount and maybe the USD amount to make it easy for people. What do they got to bring to try out the beta?
Absolutely. They just need 0.01 Bitcoin to get started. That's 300 USD. That might be one DCA or one monthly DCA for you. And that's the trial amount. And then after that, it goes up to 0.04. But you only need $300 to try it out and test it. So, yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Highly recommend. I'm currently trying it. Take a little bit of your HODL stash and put it to use, and you can do a bunch of things. I'm a big believer in experimentation and like talking your own bag. So you get to see how DLCs work, how a kind of like purpose built app works with nice product, and you can earn some more Bitcoin potentially. So I mean, it's a win-win-win across the board. So I'll have links below for everything that Matt just mentioned. But Matt, fantastic conversation. Thanks for coming to the show, man.
Thanks for having me, Jake.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on YouTube, does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So love to talk to you. You can hit me up. Again, find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting.
I've been waiting now. I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out. Make it out, because I don't